Nah, not those Lions. Three Lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.
Now you're welcome along. We have a lot to get through. So the weekend that was, first of all, Ireland put 71 points on the US on Saturday. The Lions put 71 points as well on the Sharks, albeit that second game was at least level at halftime, 26 points apiece. On Wednesday in Cape Town, it seems we'll have something that this Lions tour has been crying out for, a very competitive game. The South African A team has been named and it is strong. 18 World Cup winners included. Very happy to say Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times is with us. Hi, Gerry.
How you doing, Joe?
Very well. And Craig Ray, South African broadcaster and journalist, with us as well. Hey, Craig.
Good evening. How are you guys?
So let's start with this South African A side, Craig. There's lots to talk to you about. Razzy Erasmus is on coaching duty as Jacques Nienaber continues to isolate. This is a strong team. 18 World Cup winners included in the squad. We have Willie LaRue at full back. We have Cheslin Colby on the wing. Subu Nkosi on the other wing. We have Damien Diolande and Am as centres. We have De Klerk and Morne Steyn as 9 and 10. And plenty of beef up front as well. Peter Steph de Toit is in there. Eben Etzebeth and beyond. How far off their strongest team 2021 is this?
Yeah, I mean, look, they've played no rugby really since the World Cup, so it's as good as they can put out at the moment. They're missing a couple, Frans Malherbe being one, Andre Pollard, a big one, of course, missing your World Cup winning fly-half, Captain Sia Khaleesi, another, Dwayne Vermeulen, another. And so you're probably missing four or five of what you would call the starting 15. But it's as strong as they can put out, and it's a very strong team. And hopefully we'll see a slightly more competitive game, because up till now, the Lions haven't really been tested, which is no fault of theirs.
And are we right to think, Craig, that if the second Georgian game hadn't been cancelled, or indeed if the South Africans weren't effectively away from training all week because of the COVID situation, they would have played a weaker side? Or do you think this was always the plan?
I think they would have played a slightly weaker side than this, but it would have been a pretty formidable team anyway. He was always going to use the SAA game as a fourth test, if you like. So we might not have seen 18 World Cup winners in it, but there would have been a fair amount of them anyway. So I don't think it's too far off of what we would have seen originally.
Gerry, this tour needs it.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's popular health theory now that the warm-up games, the midweek games, the pre-test matches are kind of devaluing the Lions tour. And I think, I think back 4 years ago, and it was the matches actually really that made the tour, were those midweek games and Saturday games against the New Zealand provincial sides. They were full on. They were, they were locked and fully loaded pretty much. They were full houses. They were really meaningful games. It primed the Lions for the test series. Warren Gatland always maintained the tougher the warm-up matches, the better. And he was proved right, I think, in the end. By comparison, 12 years ago, How many of the pre-test matches did they win, Joe, out of six? All six. You see, you didn't even remember. Nobody remembers. A fat lot of good it did them as well, because they weren't primed for the first test. So they need this game, and Warren Gatland has very enthusiastically embraced it, and I think he means it. He genuinely wants this test.
The thing is, though, I suppose those games against weaker opposition, Gerry, in front of a festival atmosphere and a sense of the South African rugby community coming out to see the Lions and, like I said, their team having a crack off the Lions. There's a kind of a point to that, but those games now in an empty stadium just feel utterly pointless.
Yeah, they do, don't they? They've been seriously devalued, no crowds there. I don't think it helped the optics of this tour, that leaving aside all the COVID stuff and how bad that is, particularly away from the rugby, but leaving all that aside just hasn't helped the optics of this tour, that there's been full houses in Wembley and elsewhere across the Euros. And you can just see that even though players are coming to the end of a long, hard, tough season, they have been energised by full stadia or half full stadia. And it just makes such a difference to the event. Even being in the Aviva Stadium last Saturday, and there were 6,000 people there, the difference between 6,000 and 3,000, never mind nothing, was quite significant. And it would look a whole, it would feel and sound, more importantly, a whole lot different if there were crowds there. They should have moved the tour to the UK, but it's done and dusted now.
Craig, sorry to throw one of these horribly broad questions at you, but how would you say the tour has been received in South Africa?
Yeah, pretty much Jerry's thoughts are how it's been received. It's been pretty low key, no real expectations, not a lot of excitement. And that's to do with a lot of external factors in South Africa at the moment as well. The Lions tour does feel a little bit as a sideshow. And maybe we need a thunderous game just to get it on the map. Maybe that first half against the Sharks, I think, got people talking a bit about the Lions tour, and then it all sort of went flat after halftime in the second game. But, you know, South Africa is going through a lot of turmoil at the moment. I don't know if you guys have been watching the news, but there's, you know, riots and looting and, you know, Joburg and where the Lions have just left, and KwaZulu-Natal is pretty much in a state of emergency. The army's been deployed to control the situation. This is after former President Jacob Zuma was sentenced to jail and went to jail last week. And these riots started there. So, you know, the country is absolutely ravaged by COVID, by economic uncertainty, and now by political upheaval. So the Lions tour is really battling for prominence in the current environment.
Yeah, I can imagine. I did see the headline about the protest. So that's more to do with Zuma than how the COVID situation has been handled.
Yeah, well, that's where it started. I think there's a lot of opportunism now building around it. But a lot of that opportunism is stemming from poverty, from desperation, from lockdowns, from the collapse of the economy. So, you know, people who are looting shops and stealing nappies or diapers, you know, they're not doing that because they're going to make money out of those. They're doing that out of desperation.
Craig, I wanted to put a Sunday Times report to you and get your sense of what happened here. So according to the Sunday Times yesterday, the South African CEO, Jury Roux, turned up at the team hotel, and the line was that he read the team the Riot Act, the whole squad, the Riot Act. He warned them of the dire financial consequences if the tour was cancelled. Effectively, his point was, are the protocol being followed to the letter? And apparently Nelson Mandela's former bodyguard has been brought in to ensure that the protocol are being obeyed. I suppose the point that many people have made is that the Lions had an outbreak, but it was limited by comparison with the, I think at last count, 23 odd cases in the South African camp. So is that right? Jury Roux turned up at the team hotel and gave out stink?
I've heard the same story that he did. And I think that was just more out of knee-jerk and shock reaction to what's been going on and trying to get to the bottom of how it's happened. I know that they went over hours and hours and days of video footage to see if any players left the hotel or left the bubble, and they found nothing. So, you know, Rassie Erasmus today was quite trying to be diplomatic, but he seemed to be laying the fault at Georgia's door. He was saying today that, you know, when they were in the bubble in Bloemfontein, there was not a single positive case. When they came together after Bloemfontein and moved to Joburg, the only case they had was R.G. Sneeman, who had been in and out of hospital for treatment of burns, so they could put it down to leaving the bubble to go in and out of hospital to see specialists, and he was isolated. And after the Georgia game is when all the cases happened. Now, I mean, I don't know, you know, does it matter where you blame them or whether, you know, starting a blame game? But the reality is that's the timeline they've drawn up. It sounds plausible based, they've been quite transparent in releasing names from day one, who's positive. The reality is they had an outbreak of COVID in the bubble, and they've had to contain it. And it seems like they've managed to contain it. Now the 33 odd players that are fit left Joburg on Sunday, along with the Lions, different flights, I think, and have settled in their different Cape Town hotels, or Western Cape hotels in the Lions case, because they're about 100 kilometers outside of Cape Town. It looks like it's under control now, but I'm not sure what it's doing for team morale, what the mental state of the players is, how they're feeling, because they basically were locked in their rooms in a small hotel room all of last week without training, without leaving, eating their meals there. So it can't have been good for their mental state. And, you know, it's also put them behind in a big way in terms of on-field preparation.
Yeah, I can imagine. Jerry, what are you hearing about the morale in the Lions camp?
I'm not hearing a whole lot, like in terms of inside intel, but the little bit I've heard, plus what I'm observing, so far so good, Joe, in the sense that they're in everything that's being thrown at them as almost having a unifying effect, and spirits are quite high. But of course, it is still very early days. But you could, I think you can see that in the performances, in their demeanour, in the way they celebrate tries off the pitch as well as on the pitch, the way they just the demeanour of the whole squad. They seem to be quite upbeat. I think Warren Gatlin placed great store by the characters he picked in the squad. You know, you've got people like Bundyaki who are going to be life and soul of the party and always have their spirits up. And I think that there's a strong thread of that kind of character running through the squad as well. But yeah, I listening to Craig there, at least the Lions had training. Could you imagine if they didn't have training? Like, I'd say training must be absolutely like huge relief. Just get out of their rooms, get out of their hotels, and actually get on a rugby pitch and just do things with a rugby ball, because that's what they are, professional rugby players. So at least they've had that as well. The matches are still coming thick and fast, and the test series is looming extraordinarily quickly into view all of a sudden, isn't it? Just Saturday week. And I think that's concentrating folks in minds as well. The problem might be then, when the test series does come to being, that there's going to be no midweek matches unless the Bulls game is rearranged. So you could have 3.5 weeks out from the third test of the first test team being announced, and 3.5 weeks out from the third test, there might be a core of players, 7, 8, 9, 10, who think, well, that's my tour over now, and I've got 3 more weeks of this.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose as we head towards the first test, Craig, the threat that COVID poses becomes ever more severe, because the time for recovery and isolation obviously dwindles by the day. So Razzie Erasmus, even talking today, he was making the point that maybe the best thing to happen on this tour now is that the Lions play South Africa A on Wednesday, and then they play South Africa A on Saturday as well. So he said it's the safest option. It reduces exposure with other squads. We've been tested negative now 2 days in a row. We don't have a positive case within the squad currently in our Cape Town hotel. We're in a totally hard bubble, moving nowhere. British and Irish Lions squad is negative. My honest opinion is that to play a team like the Stormers or the Sharks, I think the chances of infection is as good as we had when we played Georgia on 2nd of July. Up until the Georgia test match, we had one case, Orgy Sneeman. And then after the Georgia test match, we had 8 members of management alone testing positive. I'm not pointing fingers at Georgia. I'm just saying it's a very tough situation to control. What odds of a second match on the Saturday against South Africa A?
Not good. Apparently, Warren Gatlin ruled it out completely at his media briefing today. So clearly the Lions don't want it, and for obvious reasons. They don't want to give the Springboks any leg up in the series, and they don't want to give them any more preparation. You know, it suits the Lions down to the ground if the Springboks go into test number one with 2 matches, essentially, if you call this SAA game a second match, 2 matches in 20 months. So they're not good. I personally, you know, the Lions, and Gatland has moaned about the level of provincial opposition pretty much after every game. And so he should take on the extra SAA game, because it will be to the Lions' benefit as well, I would think, in terms of preparation. But I understand why they would be reluctant to do that as well, because it aids the Springbok preparation. So it's a difficult one. Personally, Rusty's point about the bubble is a very good one. I mean, the Stormers have had a bunch of cases recently. Their coaching staff didn't coach the team last week before their Currie Cup game. They were isolated, all of them. They went in with one assistant coach to a Currie Cup game. Apparently, there's a couple of players that have been down. You know, you are opening the risk of a slightly less secure bubble and exposing the Lions to it. And you know, Gatlin's stance, while understandable, what happens on Monday or Tuesday next week if after the Stormers game a couple of Lions players, key Lions players, end up positive or have to go into isolation before the first test? So the safest option would be to have another SAA game from the outside looking in. And from a rugby point of view, it makes a lot of sense as well.
Craig, just one last one before we let you go. So it seems the plan now is to everybody sit tight and cross fingers and everything else in the hope that tests 1, 2 and 3 go ahead without COVID striking. That's the only plan really available. There's no flying up to UK. Maybe they go to Cape Town, maybe they don't. But this virus, unfortunately, is making its way throughout the country. When Jury Roo goes to the team and warns them about the dire financial consequences, this is something that is said in the media up here, but we don't have much meat on the bone. So it seems there's an existential threat facing South African rugby financially. So how dire is the situation financially? And if the Lions tour for some reason just had to collapse, what does that mean for South African rugby? Is it the TV money where they're making a, a bunch of money here? Because obviously commercially they're not making anything from match tickets being sold or merchandise, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's broadcast money and some sponsorship money, which is linked to test matches. And yeah, the Springboks playing a certain amount of test matches a year. So, you know, there are penalties if that doesn't happen as well. But the broadcast money is the big one. And okay, they've been in three games of this tour so far. And the way I understand it is the broadcast money is on a sort of per game basis. But the test matches are the absolute meat of the tour. And if they don't go ahead, you know, South African rugby stands to lose somewhere in the region of 400 to 500 million rand. Now, to put that in context, that's, if it's 500 million rand, that's about half what they would earn their turnover in a year, in a normal year, not a COVID year.
Okay.
So, you know, you take COVID 2020, where they basically earned no income, they lost 1 billion rand, and you throw away 500 million rand this year, that's 1.5 billion rand. I mean, that's enough to literally collapse the professional rugby program in South Africa. It will certainly mean fewer players being paid. It will mean fewer contracts being handed out, and it will mean a shrinking of the entire professional structure in South Africa. That's how dire it is.
Wow. Okay. On that note, Craig, thanks so much for checking in. Much appreciated. I know you have to run there. Thanks a million.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers. Craig Ray there with us. Jerry, the news keeps coming. So this tour is anything but predictable. Alan Wynne-Jones, Warren Gatland, yeah, talking today. So he's called it maybe a miracle recovery. There's a possibility he may come back on tour. He's back training. We're waiting for the medical reports to see what happens. A few weeks ago, we didn't think it was an option. But now he's been back training fully in Wales, and he's doing a double session tomorrow with the Welsh team. We'll see what the outcome of that is. Extraordinary from a dislocated shoulder.
Just over 2 weeks ago, isn't it, Joe?
Three.
Isn't that all?
Three weeks. But still.
Just over 3 weeks ago. It was amazing. Dislocated shoulder. Yeah, it was astonishing news. And what Warren Gatland also said was that he would be making a decision probably within the next 24 hours, both about that and the possibility of bringing out a fourth hooker, namely Ronan Kelleher. So it does seem as if that Alan Wynne-Jones, if he comes through this double session tomorrow with Wales, will be flying out to South Africa. Mara Toje jokingly suggested they'll probably put him on a, Lions can afford to put him on a private jet. Don't know about that. But yeah, it looks like he might be joining him. This certainly makes it tough for Ian Henderson to get into the second row, doesn't it, on the test side? And it'd be interesting to see. I presume, does Conor Murray keep the captaincy? I presume he does.
Does he go? Well, I don't know. Or does he? I mean, it's amazing. We'll have to see how he goes tomorrow. I don't know what state his shoulder could be in. Maybe it was a relatively smooth dislocation, if such a thing is possible in your shoulder. So the Kelleher call-up maybe tomorrow. This is as cover. It seems the two camps have been talking. Gatland seemed to be saying there is a fear of uncontested scrums. Obviously, if you pick up maybe one injury in training and then another injury happens and you call someone up like Kelleher. There'd be a number of days quarantining or something to that effect before they'd be cleared to play. So that's the logic.
So get him out there now. It's a funny one because this rumour has been circulating since last week. And I went to considerable lengths over the weekend to ascertain whether it was true or not. And there was still no word in the Irish camp, supposedly as of Saturday night, that Ronan Kelleher was actually going to be called up. But I had heard that Warren Gatland wanted Ronan Kelleher to be in the match day squad against Japan. I think was it Jamie Jordan was called in on the bench that day. But Andy Farrell wanted him for the two Irish games on the basis that at that stage, Ronan Kelleher was not going to be going out to South Africa. So therefore, he was better off staying with Ireland than playing and being on the bench for the Lions against Japan. You can see where Andy Farrell might be coming from as well. Mm. But and maybe that people are adding two and two together, coming up with five. But no, it does. Although he didn't mention Ronan Kelleher by name, he was asked about Ronan Kelleher and spoke about bringing out a fourth hooker. And again, said this decision was going to be made in the 24 hours. So it looks as if, it looks like Ireland might be back up to their original quota.
Yeah, amazing for him. The Marcus Smith news then. So Andy Farrell was quite strong in this. After the game on Saturday, he was saying, look, he's the best 10 in the Six Nations, Johnny Sexton. He's fighting fit, because that was the question mark. He said he's fighting fit, he's been in our camp, and Warren knows that. So that was quite strong on Farrell's part. The Gatland logic was, this is a like-for-like swap. Finn Russell may be out for the next 2 weeks and Smith is a similar threat. So you suspect if it was a bigger or Farrell injury, Sexton might have got the call. I'm not sure that will be of much solace to him at this stage, mind.
no, won't be of any solace to him at all, and he'd be bitterly disappointed. Mind you, I'd say he wouldn't have been remotely surprised either. He hasn't played since the Exeter semi-final. He got his last head knock. He was rested for the semi-final, stood down the semi-final against La Rochelle. He's been back training ever since then. The Lions medical staff know his training schedule. They know how he's been doing in training. But it didn't help his cause either, ironically, that Andy Farrell also made the very understandable decision that he wanted to rest Johnny along with Keith Earls and Keane Healy from the two summer tests against Japan and the USA because he wanted to have a look at Joey Carberry and Harry Bird. And so that actually has played against Johnny's, because when you compare it, Marcus Smith in the last 4 weekends has been a star for Harlequins, phenomenal semi-final and final wins in the Premiership, and then back-to-back tests, his first two tests for England. Albeit that's going to create complications for him now because he's just landed in South Africa today and he's going to have to learn the Lions playbook. So it'd be his third different team in a period of just over a month.
Yeah. So to Wednesday then, and I should let listeners know, we have commentary of the game against South Africa with Jack Cardy alongside Neil Tracy. It's live on News Talk, 6:45. Kickoff obviously is 7. Our coverage brought to you in association with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions. Let me throw a bunch of things at you and you go wherever you want here. Really what I'm getting at is, who's sticking out and what partnerships are emerging? So for Wednesday's game, Bigger and Murray start. So you would think that's a nice run through for the starting 9 and 10. I see Itoje and Henderson are in the second row together. That's a partnership which jumps off the page. The back row, Jerry, Tom Curry, Faletau, who everyone thinks will start as well as Jack Conan is playing, just Gatland is so loyal to Faletau. And Josh Navidi's in there. I know that number 6 jersey's been talked about as maybe Tadhg Burns or Courtney Laws, but who knows with Gatland. So Navidi's in there with Curry and Faletau. Yesterday, reading the papers, Stuart Barnes said, don't worry at all about Robbie Henshaw. He's just been held back for the first test. He's a guaranteed starter. I saw Ian McGeegan picking his team, and it's Farrell and Chris Harris in there. So Harris has caught the eye, Van der Merwe's caught the eye, Josh Adams 8 tries in 3. I've thrown a lot at you there, so you go wherever you want. I'm trying to get information out to the listeners there for people who aren't watching all these games, because I know they're not the most enticing of games. So who's caught your eye? What partnerships for Wednesday jump out to you as significant?
Right, for Wednesday, I would agree, starting with the halfbacks, I think Conor Murray and Dan Bigger are going to be the Lions' first test halfbacks. I thought Conor Murray was, I know he had a kick charge down, but that was really more because they didn't get their caterpillar right. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be a warning for him. That'll be a useful exercise because the Lions have had a couple of box kicks charged down, but they'll rectify that, I'm sure. I thought Conor Murray brought real presence when he came onto the pitch, and just look what he is, like a world-class scrum half. Bigger's been playing really good rugby, so I just think that has a look of a first test halfback partnership. Itoje and Henderson could be the way to go too. I think if I was to put money on it, I would go with Itoje and Henderson as well. Itoje is obviously a fantastic player. I think Henderson's been having a good tour. Mm. He's a good line-out caller. He's experienced the tour 4 years ago. So you've got all those four players are experienced Lions tourists as well. Back row is anybody's guess. Jeepers Joe, I have not a clue. I see a lot of people having Talupe Faletau in the number 8. Personally, I don't think he's shown an awful lot of form, not like a Six Nations form, but of course he does have a lot of credit in the bank from the tour 4 years ago. So it'll be interesting to see how well he goes. I think if he goes well, yep, he's probably the test number 8 because Warren Gatland is just such a big fan of his and has worked with him for so many years that he knows what he's going to get. I think Tadhg Burns having a fantastic tour as well. Like, he's a good line-out option. He's a point of difference in his strength over the ball and the jackal. And his lines of running and his carrying have been very good. He certainly has an eye for the try line as well. That's fiercely competitive because I would have thought going out that maybe Courtney Laws was the favourite for that position, and Josh Navidi's going well too. But yeah, that one's up for grabs, as is the 7 jersey between all three of them. Hamish Watson, I see Barnsley, I don't think picked Hamish Watson because he wasn't a line-out option, but I still think Hamish Watson's been playing very, very well. He sure punches above his weight, but that's fiercely competitive in the back row. The back three is really interesting. There's so many contenders there. I'm looking at, actually on the screen, my TV here, I just hit pause, and Ian McGeegan's back three is Josh Adams, Liam Williams and Anthony Watson. I'd actually agree with that. I think that might be the test back three. But it's interesting that Watson's playing a full back. Lewis Rees-Zammit, I would have liked to have seen in the test team because I just thought he provides a real kind, he's on a crest of a wave, a bit like Marcus Smith at the moment coming out there. He's just capable of ripping it up. But Anthony Watson is a superb player, very good on the high ball, experienced Lions tourist. And you cannot ignore Josh Adams' try scoring form. Like, it's just ridiculous. What is it, 8 tries in 3 games out there?
Yeah.
Like, it's just the man just sniffs out the try line. He's a pure out and out finisher, and it almost would be no point in not picking somebody who scored 8 tries in 3 games. Then it really would devalue the warm-up games, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then midfield, I would agree with Barnsley and not so much with Ian McGeoghan. I think Robbie Henshaw will be the 13 because I think Owen Farrell might be the 12. I can't imagine Owen Farrell not being in that test team because he is a test match animal. And Robbie Henshaw's just been in flying form. That being said, Chris Harris is very good at the weekend. He's been shifted to the outside centre. So obviously all these players have chances. The other thing about it as well, Joe, is like 4 years ago, I was lucky enough to be writing Warren Gatland's Lions Tour Diary, a book. And genuinely, we play much more of this, oh, that's the test team, weeks out in advance, than the coaches do. They do like to let the evidence of in front of their own eyes, you know, be major factors. I don't know necessarily that they've anything like their test team nailed down yet themselves.
Okay, interesting. Time's against us. Before you go, so Ireland 71, USA 10. USA, Andy Farrell thanked them for fulfilling the fixture. They got about 10 days together, 6-day turnaround from the England game. It was all very short notice. So it was a fairly routine, facile win. 8 new caps, 10 tries scored. We should mention as well, be careful what you wish for. You know, we're bemoaning these easy games. So the news today in the autumn, and this is a hell of a lineup, Ireland will play New Zealand, Japan and Argentina for the November International. So that will be, I think you pointed out today in the paper as well, that would be 4 matches against New Zealand next season for Andy Farrell.
yeah. Nice easy year for him, isn't it? That's a tough way to end any season. And imagine if the Lions have been put back a year and Ireland had to go out to New Zealand without 8 or 9 of their frontline players. Mm. It's just not doable. Quite a year. Very exciting fixtures. You'd hope there'd be, you know, might be in a position to have maybe even half full, 3/4 full, full stadium or something like that for the All Blacks back in town. First time in Dublin since Ireland beat them for the first time ever on home soil in 2018. Japan are now, you know, in the top 10 of the world and look like they're going to be staying in the top 10 for a while. And they're probably the most entertaining side in the world to watch as well. So that's a very attractive fixture. And the Pumas have been, you know, much more attractive visitors in latter years than the old arm wrestles that we used to always have with them. What Brian O'Brien used to call the Ireland-Argentina Derby. They used to meet so often in World Cups and friendlies and summer tours and the works. So, and of course, they're going over to Las Vegas as well at the end of October to play the Americans again. So it's a very exciting month. You'd imagine a lot of the players actually played last Saturday will be taken to Las Vegas maybe again. You think back 4 years ago, Joe, and I think was it James Ryan, Jacob Stocktail and Andrew Porter were 3 of the 8 new caps blooded on that USA-Japan tour that ended up being staple parts of the Irish squad in a very successful year and going to the World Cup in no time after that. I think if there's a similar return out of the 9 players who've been given debuts over the last 2 weeks, that'd be pretty good. And you'd have to think that, you know, Robert Balakoon, all the promise he's shown that, you know, he really has an X factor. He's just got a wonderful balanced way of running that reminds me a lot of Doug Howlett, just the way he can veer either way without losing any pace whatsoever at full tilt. And Gavin Coombs, it's amazing to think that when CJ Stander announced his retirement, you know, such a stalwart of the Irish and Munster teams for much of the last decade. And now we've got Jack Conan on the Lions, you've got Caelan Doris coming through again, and we've got Gavin Coombs. We're suddenly awash with 8s. I thought Coombs, if it hadn't been for Kelleher's 4-try exploits, probably would have won man of the match.
Right.
I think
okay.
Only 3 players had more passes. He had the most carries and he had the most tackles. And some of his handling skills would remind you of Anthony Foley, that they're that good.
Great, well, we need a bit of that. Caelan Doris was back in as well, I saw. And then a bunch of debuts off the bench. Harry Byrne, Caelan Blade, Finian Witcherly, Paul Boyle. The overall performance seemed like it was decent, fair after the first 15-20 minutes?
Yeah, it was. It was a very enjoyable game to watch. An Irish rugby team with 20 or more offloads. We haven't seen that in some seasons. We haven't seen that. I don't think Joe Schmidt would have approved at all. Yeah. It was great to watch. And they used plenty of width. Now, admittedly, the USA Eagles, not only should they be thanked for turning up, but they were very obliging defensively as well. Their defense had more holes than a soup strainer at times, and they were opened up quite easily. But and then when they went down to 14 men, it just became fun and games. The Irish team taking them from right touchline to left touchline and back again and forth. But I thought that some of the interplay between the forwards and backs, given there was a brand new team put together in the last couple of weeks, and certainly some of the offloading, some of the heads-up awareness. You know, they could see Joey Carberry taking the ball to the line. He looked like the plan move. He was taking the ball a lot as second receiver, which he suited him. He was getting to be more damaging with his passing game and his running game. And he kind of went off script once and went between 2 players and popped a lovely offload to Andrew Conway, who had a brilliant 40 minutes. And it was good to see Joey taking the ball to the line into contact a few times. yeah, it was a very enjoyable game. I know you've got to make allowances for the opponents who, you know, have had very little rugby themselves, and they're being drawn from a league that is some way short of the Pro 14 even. But all you can only beat what's in front of you, and the manner of it was pleasing. And it was a nice way to wrap up the season, you know, a nice sense of occasion about it, a lovely evening, 10 tries.
Yeah.
Some of them crackers. Rowan Keller chipping in with 4 and 5 wins in a row. I think overall, Joe, you can say, with given thanks to that victory over England in particular, it's generally been a positive season now for Ireland. It could, of course, be a bit better, but I think generally the ledger's on the positive side.
Yeah, you can make hard work of these games against lesser teams, like the Georgia game last November, so I guess you can't complain too much when you could.
As England did the week before, Joe, against the same opponents.
Yeah. Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times, thanks so much, Gerry.
You're welcome, Joe. Pleasure.
Cheers. Our rugby coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.